Our next topic is pain assessment and management. And to address this topic is Dr. Ed Pager, Professor Animal Behavior and Welfare with the Faculty of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Calgary. He's recognized not just here but internationally for his research in the areas of swine, dairy, and poultry behavior and welfare, as well as having extensive experience in animal welfare standards and legislation. And having witnessed his hard work at the Calgary Stampede, he has some good experience with rodeo rough stock as well, believe it or not, up close and personal. Welcome, Ed.
Thank you, Susan. Yes, even though I do look like a steer wrestler, that is not exactly what I do. I was asked by the organizers to speak on the issue of what, based on Jeff's talk, I'm now going to call the unavoidable topic of pain. And just before I get started, though, I want to apologize to Crystal because there will be no presentations today with animals in costume. But I won't disappoint the rest of you by being a researcher and concluding that we need more research at the end. I'd like to thank my colleague Dan Weary as well for some of the images you're going to see today. Thank you. Oh, that makes life easier. Okay. So, what I'd really like to do today is to talk about a number of different issues associated with animal pain. And I think animal pain is a really important issue. This is in the category today of challenges. And it's no longer just an emerging challenge. Okay? It is a challenge that is here today that we're going to have to address in the very near future. There's a great deal of pressure coming from other places in the world on this issue of animal pain and animal castration. It's also one of the issues, not castration specifically, but pain, that people can really understand, right? People worry about their own pain. They worry about their children's pain. They worry about pain medication when children are cutting their teeth and different aspects of things like that. And they also expect pain management to occur when it comes to animals, when it comes to taking their dog to the veterinarian, having any procedures done. It's kind of part of the regular process of the, even though there's very little relationship to agriculture by them, they actually understand animal pain. And if you think about some of the other issues that we've been dealing with in the farm animal community, things like gestation stalls, which I know Catherine will probably touch on next, how complicated is the issue of a housing system and management practices? And look at the influence that concern over that issue has created in society and movement around this issue and people changing practices about something that people really don't understand. It's going to be very easy to have a conversation about animal pain and pain mitigation, much easier than other more complicated issues that we've been dealing with. All right, so we're going to talk about pain. We're going to ask questions about whether or not we can assess it. Are there alternatives? How do we manage it, or can we manage it? And what are the implications of this whole issue? Pressures from international marketplaces, other activities that are happening internationally, and what we can do about it now here in Canada and North America. I'm going to go fairly quickly through my slides to try to keep us on time just a little bit. So there will be a bunch of data slides presented. I'm not going to go over them in great detail, but just to give you a flavor as to what some of the evidence is. So let's start off, because I am a professor, I need to start off by defining something for you. I define pain in terms of what is pain. And this comes from the International Association for the Study of Pain. It's an unpleasant sensory or emotional experience associated with actual or potential tissue damage. Pretty straightforward. There's different types of pain, of course. There's lots of definitions around different aspects of pain, but very simply, we can have acute pain, chronic pain. There's a bunch of other more academic definitions around the whole sensation of pain, but I don't think that's necessarily we need to talk about that necessarily today. Assessing pain is a difficult thing to do. And acute pain and chronic pain deals with acute being very short-term over a few hours or a few days, chronic much more longer-lasting. This slide here simply shows some of the procedures that are done on farms that can cause pain. And each one of these procedures can be involved with either acute or chronic pain. But before we go there, we need to take a step back maybe and think about this issue of subjective states or affective states in animals and whether or not animals can actually experience pain. Nico Tinbergen, who was one of the founders of the field of the scientific study of animal behavior or ethology, suggested that because subjective phenomenon cannot be observed objectively in animals, it is idle to claim or deny their existence. This is a quote from, look at the year, 1950. Okay. If you stop and think about where we've come from 1950, we end up with something like Marion Dawkins, who says, since objective experiences are known only to those experiencing them, the only way we can infer their existence in any other being, human or non-human, is by analogy, the argument from analogy. So yes, although we can't understand exactly what other animals are experiencing in terms of their feelings, we can take the argument from analogy, which basically says, if animals have behaviors that we would predict would occur as a result of pain, if they have the same type of neuroanatomy, if they have similar physiological responses, then they're probably feeling something like pain, right? So it is a question that is difficult to address, difficult to assess in terms of pain, difficult to appreciate the fact that, you know, can you actually really understand what other animals are experiencing, how they're feeling? I mean, I have a teenage daughter, okay? She has half my genes, was raised in my house, and I'm not sure I actually understand her feelings all the time either, okay? It is difficult to even know what you as an audience are experiencing. Forget when I go to another species, okay? That's a challenge, that's a limitation. However, that's something that we're gonna be getting better at doing. Can we assess animal pain? It is problematic. What we would really like, right, is we would really like to be able to find a single measure that we could take and say, this is the indicator of pain, here it is, and this is how much pain the animals are experiencing. Doesn't work that way, right? It's a concept like stress. What's the measure? Well, there isn't a single measure that addresses that whole issue, okay? So what we need to do then, again, is look at the physiology, behavior, and general functioning of animals to get a sense of what kind of pain animals are experiencing, how we go about assessing it. This slide is a picture of an image taken from a recent paper written by Karen Schwarzkopf and myself and others on the whole issues of assessing pain. You see there are various painful procedures, but there are different ways of assessing it. We are going to go from thermal imaging to other types of measures in terms of being able to assess it, from cortisol to heart rates to things like feed intake, general behavior patterns, behaviors in squeeze chutes. And I'm gonna touch a little bit on each one of those. So even though we don't have specific measures associated with pain, we have indicators that there's something like pain going on. And really, if you stop and think about it, all the drugs that we use to address our headaches and aches and pains have all been tested on animals. Right? I mean, if they weren't going to work, if the animals didn't experience pain, there really wouldn't be much point in going that route. This slide from Dan Weary's work on gait and lameness in animals is an indicator of how we can look at the behavior of the animals and look at how they might be experiencing pain. We know that when animals are in pain, when dairy cattle are in pain, they have different pattern of walking in terms of pain associated with lameness. The spinal arch, different joint flexes, not being able to track up properly, head bobbing up and down, those types of things. So those are really basic type behavioral indicators that these animals are experiencing pain. Vocalization when it comes to piglet castration. The argument has always been that when farmers pick up a pig, piglets squeal. When farmers castrate a pig, piglets squeal. Therefore, castrating is about as harmful as picking up a pig, okay? Nobody really believes that, and we know now, but there was no real way of demonstrating that that was the case until we started to use vocalizations to look at the actual types of calls that were being made. And we now see very clearly that there are a different set of calls made when animals are castrated, when the spermatic cord itself is cut, compared to other parts of the process as well. This here is another representation of castrated and non-castrated animals. The basic message here is that castrated animals behave very differently than non-castrated animals. There's more trembling involved, and there's more things like trembling involved, tail wagging involved, those types of things. So there are clear indicators, again, that the behavior of the animal changes in a way compared to the non-castrated animals, and in a way you might actually predict that it would change. Again, pig vocalizations, just going back to those, getting a little more specific in terms of the response. It is a call rate response, but it's not a call rate response of any of all calls. It is specific frequency and high pitch calls that occurs during castration. So can we assess animal pain? Can we start measuring aspects of animal pain? We think we can. Other more recent deals include something like infrared thermography. So in the top picture, you see the infrared thermography of a calf that's being castrated. The first image in that series is an image of a very hot animal, okay, so in terms of temperature. During castration, what happens is that the blood is shunted away from the head area towards where the injury is occurring, and we can see that change in thermographic images. Dr. Karen Schwarzkopf in Lethbridge and Joe Stuckey at Saskatoon have done a lot of work using the chutes with the pressure transducers on them to look at the movement of the animal within the chute during castration under different types of treatments, with pain mitigation and with not without. And then basically, again, back to posture changes in terms of cattle. So here again with the calves, it's a very abnormal type of posture, the hunched back, the drawn in leg. This animal has just been banded, I think, or has been, I think that's a banding or a dehorning. It's wearing a heart rate monitor as well. So heart rate monitors, more electronic type of approaches to assessing animal pain are being developed all the time. Here is an EEG in the top corner. The line going down through on the vertical is actually when castration occurs. So these are brain waves, different types of brain waves that people are looking at. And in the top, the second line there, you can see that there is quite a difference in how those brain waves look before castration and after castration, and then some others as well. So we're starting to get to the point where we can actually look at brain activity associated with these events and seeing how they're different. What does that mean all about pain? They're all different indicators. Again, you have to remember there's no specific indicator associated with it. Finally, at the bottom is something called an algometer, which measures sensitivity. So after a particular practice is done, we can look at pressure sensitivity. When does the animal start to draw away from being touched with an algometer? So again, another indicator, another way to assess and measure pain in animal and sensitivity in animal in terms of these procedures. Okay, so are there alternatives? Alternatives are being discussed and developed all the time. In terms of a framework to think about where we move forward in animal pain and painful procedures, I think Dan Weary and David Fraser back in 2008 kind of put forward a framework which I think is quite useful, and I use in my class all the time, and I challenge my class who are first-year veterinarians. We have a wonderful program at UCVM where all first-year students are required to take animal behavior and welfare and a large number of hours as well, which isn't always common in all the other vet schools in North America. But I challenge them to think about this framework when they go out on farms, when they go visit with the other faculty and take part in procedures, to ask the question about this framework. What are the aims of the procedures? Why is this being done? Does it make sense that these procedures are being done? Okay. Does the procedure achieve its aims? What are the negative effects? Okay. And can the procedures, if they are justified, if they can achieve the aims, are they being done in the best way possible in terms of minimizing pain that the animals experience? Okay. This isn't saying that we have to stop doing this or banning that. This is a question saying, let's take a good hard look at the practices we're doing, consider alternatives. If there are no alternatives, have we done everything we can to make the process as welfare friendly as possible? And really, when you start looking at the various types of procedures that are done on farm, what you find is that there are a number of different types of activities or different types of procedures that are being developed in terms of each one of these, from disbudding to beak trimming to branding and castration. I'll talk a little bit about some of them, although fairly briefly. This comes from the Alternatives to Pig Castration website, where there's a list there of number of alternatives that they're working on, from having entire animals in the production system to semen sexing to genetic selection. And if you go there, you'll find discussion about positives and negatives about each of these. Other potential differences includes things like surgical castration without anesthetic, using analgesia, et cetera, and then down to immunocastration. So are there alternatives? Are they practical? Maybe not right now in some cases. But are there alternatives being developed and worked on? The answer is yes. And that's why I say it's not just one of these emerging challenges. It's at a point where we are starting to develop practices and approaches that people are using in different parts of the world. Another promising approach may be a genetic approach. And historically, what we've done in terms of something like cattle is to look at the development of polled breeds of cattle. There's been an awful lot of work done, though, in molecular biology looking at gene manipulation or gene editing, where you go in and you cut out parts of a gene. This is a recent paper published published in September of this year, looking at gene editing. And what they were able to do is to go in and edit the genes of Holsteins, I believe, and to cut out the genes associated with the cut out part of the gene associated with the development of horns. So this is done out of the University of Minnesota, and they're working very hard to convince people that this isn't some sort of genetic engineering, but a molecular biological process that leads to what would happen under years and years of selection for these breeds. So there are techniques being developed, and this was specifically for the issue of animal welfare and dehorning. Perhaps when it comes to castration, this type of technique for piglets, for example, could also be used to address the issue associated with boar taint. Right? So there are advances occurring that something like genetic engineering or genetic editing may be involved with. In terms of looking at influences from other places in the world, I think we, as always, have to take a look at what's happening in Europe, and that was mentioned earlier today in terms of castration projects. This report actually focused on not just castration of piglets, but was published in 2009 and looked at alternatives for the castration of pigs and alternatives for dehorning of cattle. That's in 2009, not that long ago. What's happened since then is that we've had the European Declaration on Alternatives to Surgical Castration of Pigs, which is a voluntary agreement to phase out surgical castration of pigs in Europe by January 2018. There are a number of organizations listed there, ranging from animal care activist groups to actual farmers that are producing the animals themselves. It's also interesting, I think, that rather than having an EU directive or some sort of legislative approach, they're now shifting towards much more a voluntary approach. If you're interested in the whole issue of what's happening in Europe and their approach to looking at alternatives for pig castration, there's a very good website that they've put up called Alternatives for Pig Castration. And they've listed a number of projects that they have going there, reports that they have going there, publications, the research that they're doing. And I was really quite impressed that the research that they're doing is not just about what animals are experiencing, is this good or is this bad. There's actually a great deal of effort looking at the economic impacts of some of these decisions. What does it mean economically to the entire supply chain if you were to market entire hogs rather than castrated animals? If they're going to be going down that route, they have to also be looking at how do you detect boar taint on the line, and so they're developing all kinds of techniques to look at that. So they're really kind of taking it from the farm all the way to the plant, realizing that at the end, consumers are going to not want to have a product with boar taint in it, but is there a way that they can get there, and what are the steps along the way and the economic implications of that? And in fact, when Sandra Edwards spoke at the Tim Hortons Summit there last week, she said that there were two really main issues in Europe that were emerging around in animal welfare at the moment. And one was what she referred to as mutilations, which is the castration and tail docking, et cetera. And the second was the provision of enrichments, which I found quite surprising. So, can we manage the pain? Well, it seems as if we can. There seems to be a great deal of information out there about managing pain, right? We know what the receptor sites are for animals. It's part of the textbooks that we teach our students to do. Techniques are being developed for on-farm. We have veterinarians. I spoke to a number of veterinarians in Alberta working on feedlots who are very, very sincere and very proactive in training their staffs, training their clients, training the producers how to conduct horn blocks, for example, when it comes to dehorning animals. And we know that it has an impact as well. So for examples, if we look at the use of analgesics in certain types of study, so we have decreases in those activities, those behaviors associated with things like dehorning with head jerks and things like that. Again, this is out of a textbook on how to actually put in, I think it's lidocaine at this point, but I'm not sure what it is, but how to inject into the scrotum area of a calf to actually create an analgesic, an anesthetic impact on the animal prior to castration. So the information seems to be there. It is being taught. It is being introduced. It's not as if we don't know how to do it. One of the most interesting studies that was done in terms of pain management actually happened with broiler animals. Broiler chickens. And that was a paper that was done on self-selection of feed by broiler animals. So there were animals that were identified as being lame and having leg problems. When they were given a choice to choose food that contained an analgesic in them, an aspirin-type product, if you will, they selected that product much more than animals that weren't observed and defined as being lame. So given the animals an opportunity to medicate themselves, they chose that opportunity. We also know that in terms of the gait improvement I talked about before, when animals are given an NSAID like ketoprofen, gait scores improve in terms of the dairy cattle studies by Flower and Weary. Again, more evidence. But I do want to mention a couple of other things quite briefly, if possible. And that is a recent project I was involved with. But before I do that, I want to show you an example on video of of the effect of something like blocking for disbudding of dairy calves. Can I have the video, please? So this image shows animals. This is an image by Dr. Aaron Fearheller that was done at our facilities or through UCVM. So this is disbudding without anesthetic. Watch the behavior of the animal. That's a hot iron disbudding. It's commonly done on farms. It's being done by a very good dairy veterinarian. Watch the number of people involved and the behavioral response of the animal. So another example without anesthetic, the tail flicking. And one last example without the anesthetic. So the behavior of the animal is one thing to look at, the behavior of the people is another thing to look at, and the number of people involved with the process. So now switching to this budding with anesthetic. So the block's been given. Another example. So again, the animal's response and how much handling is involved, how much easier it appears. It's another part of it. You have one person doing it by themselves now, holding the head of that particular cat. Okay. This is the response of the animals 10 minutes after this budding. This is an animal without the anesthetic. So the thing to look for, we have the tail wagging, and you'll see some head shaking as well. You see some restlessness of the animal moving about more and more, and that's what's commonly reported in the literature. But the head shaking. And this is an animal that had the anesthetic. Okay. Again, the animal's pretty calm. We don't have the head shaking, those types of things occurring. Of course, there's other elements of this whole process. How quickly does it wear off? What about how does the animal respond to being given the injections, etc.? But I don't think and that's all part of the discussion and process and areas for additional work and research to actually understand what's going on there. But I think it's quite clear that that's had a pretty big effect on the behavioral responses of the animal in what we think would be a pain-related way. Because remember, we gave them an anesthetic that's aimed at reducing the pain the animals are feeling. Okay, can I go back to the slides, please? Thank you. There was a recent Iowa State workshop that was done that I was privileged to be a part of, looking at the scientific literature around castration of pigs. It was really interesting because it was headed up by an epidemiologist out of Iowa State who took an approach called grading of recommendations, assessment, development, and evaluation. It was an incredibly strict process in terms of evaluating the scientific literature that's out there on pain mitigation in piglets. Okay. It's a systematic and explicit approach to making judgments about quality of evidence and therefore, based on that evidence, going forward with strengths of recommendations. The review team, made up again of Annette O'Connor, was the lead in terms of that, and there's people from Iowa State on the steering committee, and then external participants that basically brought people in from all over the world to evaluate the literature, have expertise, and have worked in the area of piglet castration and piglet animal welfare. What did we conclude as a result of looking at the evidence? And I think this is the first time we've actually been talking about it publicly outside of the United States in terms of the work. It's also important to note that the work was actually funded by producer organizations, right? Really trying to understand where this issue is going. They made a strong recommendation. We made very few strong recommendations. One of the things we found was that in terms of the amount of scientific literature available on piglet castration, there's very little good, solid papers out there on looking at pain mitigation. Looking at, do animals experience pain? What are the indicators of pain, etc.? But pain mitigation itself, there was not very much evidence one way or the other. The few places where we could make strong recommendations was against the use of CO2 and O2 mixtures for general anesthesia for pain mitigation during castration. We had made a weak recommendation for the use of NSAIDs for pain mitigation during castration of piglets. And a weak recommendation against the use of lidocaine for pain mitigation. It seemed as if the lidocaine could itself also cause some pain. But again, these are weak recommendations suggesting through the process that there's room for a lot more work to be done in the area of pain mitigation. The committee also concluded that The single biggest barrier to making progress in the area was certainty about the validity and expected variation in measures of pain, which make interpretation of research extremely difficult. Although that's true, we have to remember there's really, what is the measure of pain? It's really a case of pulling all these measures together and trying to understand how they interact and getting kind of a better handle on how these things work in terms of the indicators. And it really was also about understanding in detail things like how much, where, when, those types of questions about providing pain mitigation. It's really not that different than, this is the paper I referred to earlier, published in Animal Frontiers. There's a wonderful magazine called Animal Frontiers. It's produced by the Animal Science Society of the United States. And what it's really meant to do is really meant to take complex scientific information and put it in a format that the general public could understand in terms of summarizing where we are. And there was a special issue about 6 months ago or so that looked at animal welfare. And so it's called Animal Frontiers, and it's on the Animal Science website. I'm sure you can get there. So it's the same type of thing that we concluded in this paper looking at pain control in beef cattle. What are the implications of all this? I think it's very clear. Animal pain is an important societal concern. I think measures of mitigation is possible and more research is needed. Surprise, 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 right? But that doesn't mean that we should do nothing now. I think there's a huge danger in adopting the strategy that, well, just because we can't measure it specifically and as accurately as we would like, just because we don't have all the drugs and all the protocols in place that we would like, I think that that's a real dangerous strategy to take as an industry, regardless of whatever industry it is. The question really is, what do we do now? And why do I raise it in that way? Do we delay until more research is done? Again, I would suggest not. This is just some information from different websites and what have you. You have already talked about the alternatives for pain castration in the bottom. On the top, we have the California Pizza Kitchen social media campaign, which says something like, California Pizza Kitchen gets its cheese from suppliers whose workers use tools like searing hot irons to burn cow's horn tissue off or caustic chemical paste that creates a chemical burn that painfully eats away at the horn tissue. A huge social media campaign that started to occur just this past few months. We have the Alternatives for Pig Castration website, where you have Europe already talking about voluntarily moving away from castration and doing fairly complex, well-funded studies looking at what that actually means. And the picture up there of the sows in the gestation stalls isn't just a segue for Catherine to talk about some of the things she's talking about, but it is a reminder of what's happened when we've ignored things that are occurring in Europe. It also is a reminder of what happens sometimes when we say, well, science will find the answer to this. Let's compare sow housing and group housing. And surprise, science doesn't always tell us what it is we ought to do. In fact, it will never tell us what we ought to do. The good news, though, is that the industry seems to be aware of these issues. They're starting to fund research in pain management in both beef cattle and pig castration issues. So that's a very proactive stance that the industry is taking. However, I do think that waiting for more research isn't the answer in terms of thinking about the future. So in conclusion, pain is a major issue. I think we have these changes in animal agriculture that we've talked about, and we've said farmers are afraid of the changes and being imposed on by others, and I can understand that. I grew up on a farm myself. I grew up on a tobacco farm in southern Ontario. The family is no longer in the tobacco business because societal pressures have changed, and we've had to do something else completely different with the land. Okay? Agriculture is seen as responding slowly to a lot of issues. I think that has to change. I think that has to change specifically around the issue of animal welfare. Animal welfare is no longer some sort of fringe issue that's out there. It is now part of the business of doing agriculture. We have it in the codes. It's part of the social discussion around raising food and making policy. And I think we have to be aware of the fact that agricultural industries and management practices in particular are going to be scrutinized, and we have to be ready to anticipate those changes. And having this thoughtful approach by supporting research, having codes, is a very positive thing. But it's not going to go away, and it's just going to be more of it in the future. So I think I've summed up everything I want to say already from that final slide, so I'll stop now, and thank you for your attention.